The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 470. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. Well, I haven't been feeling well these last couple days, as evident by my horrible sounding voice. I got a cold, it was in my head, and now it's shifted all to my chest, and it's just making me feel pretty awful. But one good thing is that before this cold took hold of me, I got the opportunity to talk to my guest. And that is a gentleman who is an independent comic book creator from California named Stephen Prince. Stephen is the creator of the Monstor Matador universe. That's right, he's got more than just one tale to tell. So we're going to talk about Monstor Matador and all of the other side projects that exist within that world, including Monstadorus One-Shot, which is the newest tale that Stephen has produced. And we'll talk about the Kickstarter and all the ins and outs of that, as he still has about 15 more days left in the campaign. But I'm going to keep this short for obvious reasons. So with that, I'm going to thank the fine folks of World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, graphic novels, collections, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues, a great pull system. It is just basically the Taj Mahal of comic book stores. So if you're in Ohio, you owe it to yourself to stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you can check them out online. WGComics.com is their web address. And they're pretty active on their Facebook page. Just search for @WG Comics. All right, with that out of the way, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Stephen Prince. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening, I'm sitting down with a comic creator from the West Coast out there in California, Stephen Prince. Stephen, how you doing?
Good. Nice to meet you, John, and happy to be here.
Well, I'm ecstatic to have you on here because I mentioned, when we were talking before we started recording, that I saw Monstor Matador. I saw that on Kickstarter, and I was fascinated by it. So I had to have you on, and I'm glad we can make it happen because, like I said, there's so many things that are like parallels with my fandom as well. So,
yeah.
But let's just talk real quickly about Monstor Matador as its own entity here. Because, as we'll discuss, you have a huge universe of Monstor Matador. So, let's just start real quick with a brief summary of Monstor Matador.
Okay. So, the long and short of it is Monstor Matador is about a matador who fights kaiju to make a better world for his daughter. That's the basic description. And the question I always get asked, how does he do it? Does he do it with a magic sword? Does he have like superpowers or anything? And he doesn't. He's literally just a matador with his sword and cape fighting, Godzilla style monsters. So part of the fun is just figuring out just how the hell he's going to actually do it.
Well, why did you select a matador for your hero? Because I don't think, as far as I know in my comic fandom, I don't know if there's been one that I can think of.
Yeah, it's surprisingly there isn't. And typically what I've seen is when there's a character, because matador means killer. So typically when you see a matador, or what I've seen in comics, it's usually a guy who's a hitman, or, you know, he's kind of dressed in like leathers or whatever, but not in the traditional matador costume. But this goes back, my grandfather's family going way, way back was Spanish. And he, as a child, he had given me a matador hat, a matador cap. And so I've always been interested in matadors. I've always, you know, kind of had a thing for them. And one day I was sitting around, I was sketching in my notebook, and I drew a matador, and then I drew Godzilla. And the name just popped in my head, Monster Matador. And that's sort of like where it came about. And I didn't really know what to do with it. This was probably like 2008-ish or something. There wasn't Kickstarter. There wasn't really like digital comics in the way we have them now. So I just kind of held on to the idea. And at some point, just for fun, I just started drawing the comics on my own, just to kind of like develop a storyline and a world and whatnot. And then I had kids, I took a break, all this stuff. And I, back around 2019, I kind of decided to move forward with, you know, a comic book and Kickstarter. A bunch of my friends were doing Kickstarters. And, that's how I met Fabio Alves, who's the artist on Monster Matador, through, Ryland Grant, who's another writer. And, I was getting ready to pitch the book to publishers and everything. And then the pandemic happened. So it's been almost 5 years. So we started in, spring of 2020 was our first book, Tangle the Matadors. And we've been doing it ever since. We're on our 10th Kickstarter right now. And we've been able to build out, you know, this universe with, you know, spin-off characters and things like that. It's been a lot of fun.
I was going to say, you have, of course, you mentioned it, Tango of the Matadors. You also have Afropocalypse.
My love letter to Predator.
Once Upon Some Monsters in Mexico. You have truly a universe, and that is absolutely amazing that you made all this happen in 5 years.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's, you know, it's funny. You just keep doing it. You know what I mean? Like, I just keep writing a script and I'm sending it. I'm so focused on the work of it that I was thinking about it this year that it's been 5 years, and it doesn't really feel like it's been that long, but it's been fun. It's great that we've been able to keep the same team together doing it for all this time too. So, which is pretty rare, I guess, in comics.
Yeah. You talked already about, Fabio, as being your artist. And if I may real quick, I dig his artwork. I really do, because to me, it has a rough and raw feel to it.
Yeah. He's, it's interesting. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, which I think matches up with the setting so well.
Yeah, it does. It gives it an edge. It gives it a real kind of personality. And what I always tell people, what's funny about it is that when I originally wrote it, I tend to write a little more comedic and things like that. And the original artist I had in mind was a little more cartoony, a little more comic booky, I guess you could say. And that didn't work out. And I was looking for an artist, and Fabio had just finished doing a book with my friend. And I wasn't really sure about his style, even though I loved his art. But then his pages started coming in, and it was kind of funny, because even like the points where I would like have humor, like really like slapsticky or something, like he played it so seriously, you know, that it added this other dimension, and it gave it this kind of like this tone, this kind of unique, kind of quirky tone, that melding of the writing and art, which is one of those really cool things you get in comics, you know, sometimes when the stars align. And so I've been really happy with how it's turned out, and it's been a lot of fun working for him, because I have a lot of fun you know, obviously writing the scripts and writing these things, and just like seeing how he'll kind of interpret them.
Well, one thing I also would like to compliment you all on is this blending of so much pop culture fandom. You bring in Lucha Libre and Indiana Jones and Mad Max, which and other things too. I'm just mentioning those three off the top of my head. Did those those are just obviously things that you really, really are a fan of and decided you had to have it in the book, or did it just happen that way, so to speak, by accident?
Some of it happens organically, you know, just by accident. The Monstradors, which is the spinoff, the Luchadors, because this Matador is from Mexico, and it just made sense that since he's Mexican, you know, and luchadors are a big part of Mexican culture, to bring in luchadors. And I love Santo. I love Santo movies, you know. it just made perfect sense. And, you know, the scene they're introduced is a nod to Santo. They're introduced as the Matador is driving toward Mexico City to go fight a monster. And he comes across these luchadors driving also toward Mexico. And they're, you know, the one of them is in a classic convertible like Santo used to drive. So we had a lot of fun with that. And then when I was writing Monstradors, which is the Luchador spinoff, I was just kind of looking for a way to differentiate it from the Matador book. And so that's where kind of like their kind of angles to sort of the archaeology aspect, to try and figure out sort of the secret behind these monsters and where they come from. Some of it just comes out organically, and some of it is, I mean, obviously I love this stuff as a fan, you know, but it's always surprising and fun how many of these things kind of work in this world, you know, like without feeling out of place, I guess, because there is a lot, you know, there's, like I said, there's luchadors, there's kaiju, there's this now like Indiana Jones, like, you know, archaeology of the unknown aspect, obviously Mad Max, you know, so there's a lot going on, but it's nice because it allows me to keep the stories fresh and go to different places with them.
Since you mentioned that El Santo is a favorite of yours, I guess I have to ask, what is your favorite El Santo movie?
they're all really, I've seen a lot, and the one I really like, it's Santo and Blue Demon. They fight the vampire women, or no, not the vampire. Oh my God, I'm forgetting the name of it.
Wait a minute, is it Santo and Blue Demon versus Dracula and Wolfman?
Yes,
that's my favorite too.
It's kind of like got this, like, he's like kind of like Batman in that one, you know?
Yeah.
He's got like, you know, it's got this really kind of, it's funny, those movies, how they kind of, you know, like kind of like James Bond, they evolve with the time. But I just, that one is so fun. Like, he's, you know, he's kind of like Batman, and, you know, he gets like the call from, I remember, like the commissioner, and it's just quirky, you know. They're both at dinner with their wives, and, you know, obviously with the masks and suits and everything. And that one is just it's wild. They've all got something to them. But that one, for whatever reason, is probably the one I've seen the most. That's one, like, if I really want to watch one, I'll like stick it on.
I ended up buying a disc. It's a double disc set. And it has the tag team one, the Wolfman and Dracula versus Blue Demon and El Santo. And then the other one's El Santo versus Frankenstein's Daughter.
Oh, yeah. I have that. That was, I forgot what label put it out. But yeah, that's the double disc set I have.
Yeah, that's the one that I have. And I don't know, Frankenstein's Daughter is okay. But
yeah.
I just enjoy the other one so much more. Yeah. It's just such crazy, wacky stuff.
Yeah, the only thing is, I wish they had the original Spanish language track. Not that I understand Spanish though, but I usually I like watching movies in the original, like the regular language, because sometimes the dubbing is kind of throws you off.
Yeah, speaking of which, you know, Mad Max has the bad dub, especially the original one. What's your favorite movie out of that franchise?
Oh, it's tough. I mean, I got to go with Fury Road.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I love like Road Warrior. I mean, I love them all. Road Warrior, it's tough. It's between Road Warrior and Fury Road, but Fury Road is just, it's just so visually impressive. And they're so, like, they were able to do so many things in that, that the guy with the guitar, you know, I just yeah. love that. I just love, it's just so crazy. You know, it's like, you take Road Warrior, which is like nuts, you know what I mean? And then you turn that up another another dozen dials or whatever. And it's just, it's nuts. And it's nonstop, you know, it's just pure adrenaline. So yeah, it is tough to pick between Fury Road and Road Warrior, but I probably go with Fury Road at this point.
Okay. Man, that's a solid pick. I probably am going with Mad Max because that's what I saw first.
Okay. See, I didn't see the first one. See, I had seen the second, the third, and then for some reason I never saw the first one until years later.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very different movie especially from Road Warrior and Thunderdome, because it's kind of like not. It's like just before the apocalypse happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have that like that craziness to it.
Mm-hmm.
So that one's always been kind of like, I mean, I like it, but it, you know, I think because I got exposed to like Road Warrior first, you know.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the Kickstarter for Monster Doors, the Monster Doors one shot. So it's a new spinoff.
Yep.
And we've talked a little bit about it. What's the current status for the project?
So right now we're a little less than $300 from funding. We've got 17 days left, so we'll get there. It's a reader-friendly one-shot, meaning you don't have to know anything about Monster Matador to jump into this book. But if you would like to, you can. There are different tiers where you can catch up on the Monster Matador stuff that has been released already, and or you can just try it out Monster Doors on its own and see if you like it. It basically is a story. It picks up the Matador had sent the Monster Doors on a mission to sort of gather an army to fight his major enemy in Once Upon Some Monsters in Mexico. And of course the Monster Doors come across a kaiju, and that in turn leads them to a secret underground kind of lair that opens up a lot of questions as to where not only the kaiju come from, but how long they've been around. That's the gist of it.
You have some great stretch goals. In fact, you're offering metal covers, which I haven't seen that too many times in the world of Kickstarter. So what was catalyst for offering those up?
Someone recommended that I do it. We've done it for the past few campaigns and they've been pretty popular. We only do like five of each. So they're pretty limited, but they look cool. So they're really cool. We also have original art. Fabio, who does Monster Matador, draws digitally. Puis Calzada, who draws Monster Doors, actually draws on paper. So we were able to have actual original art from the book. And Puis is actually, he was the artist for Metallica's tour last year. So all the art for their tour he did.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool to land him to do the art for this book.
So you have how many more days left? You said 17 days left in the campaign?
Yes, it ends, I think, April 3rd or so, 2nd or 3rd. So about 16, 17 days, yeah.
Okay, so folks, if you're listening, get over to Kickstarter, put in Monster Doors, one shot, check it out. If you can, plunk down some money and help Steven out. It's a crazy project, but I like it. So definitely do it. Definitely do it. Don't, you know, That's right. Don't wait. Otherwise you will miss out on cool things like the NWA homage straight out of Mexico. Yeah. That was some primo stuff. I enjoyed that as well.
Yeah, that's a we did a variant cover, like I said, which is the NWA Straight Out of Compton cover, but with the Luchadors. So it's Straight Out of Mexico, and we have that as a cover. We have it as a T-shirt. Maybe we'll do a sticker, you know, as a freebie for those that back. So,
okay, well, let's talk a little bit more about the crew. You mentioned about Puig. We've talked about Fabio. But I'm going to just throw out some names and just let me know about, you know, how you maybe connected with this person, their responsibilities were, or whatnot. Alex Zeef.
Alex Zeef is our colorist. I actually found her on Instagram, of all places. I was looking for a colorist, and Fabio's art is pretty difficult to color. And because at the time he was using a style where everything was defined, but as a colorist, you needed, he didn't really define angles. I forget what the style of drawing is called, but a lot of stuff was implied in the drawing. So I needed someone that really understood how to color shapes and shadows and things like that. And I found Alex, and I was going through her stuff, and I noticed that she was also a sculptor. She sculpted, which to me said she understood, you know, shadows and light and things like that in terms of like shaping things and whatnot. So that's how I found her. And she's been coloring with us now for 5 years. And she's picked up a lot of other work too, with a lot of other great indie books. She's fantastic, and she keeps getting better and better. So.
How about talking about El Cartoon and Albini?
Sure. El Cartoon is an artist from Mexico. He does a lot of luchador comics. He actually just did a Linkin Park graphic novel for 10 Ton Press. And I actually met him. We tabled together at a convention. I was a member of an organization called CAPS, which is the Comic Arts Professional Society, and so I met him through that, and I asked him to do a cover. Albini is our letterer. He's been lettering our books.
And then you also have a proofreader. You have Katrina Rowitz.
Katrina proofreads a lot for a lot of us indie Kickstarter folks, so I just kind of found her through that community, and she's been great.
I think that's a position that sometimes is overlooked on the indie circuit, so to speak.
Yeah, it is. No, it's definitely important. you know, you could go over something 100 times, you're still going to miss something, you know, but if it's one little thing, it's okay. But she's been a lifesaver, because, you know, as a writer and whatever, I look at these pages over and over and over and over again, so it all just kind of blends together. So it's really important to have like a second eye on it. I usually have two or three other people look at it too, just in case. So
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Steven for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all your comic book related needs. They've got single issues, graphic novels, collections, toys, collectibles, comic book supplies, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues, you name it, they got it. So you should stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio, or you can check them out online. WGComics.com is the web address, and they're pretty active on their Facebook page. Just search for @WGComics. Well, I would like to talk about two characters Once upon some monsters in Mexico. The first individual that I wanted to ask you about is Manuel, who is a disabled individual.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Did you feel like it was important to have that community reflected in your comic?
Yeah. I wanted to show some variety. It's also, I'm a big fan of Alejandro Jodorowsky. I don't know if you've seen his films or what, but he uses a lot of disabled actors in his films. So it was kind of a nod to that. But I also kind of felt like, you know, this is a world where, like, you know, monsters have attacked. You know, they've kind of destroyed cities and whatnot. You know, people are going to be struggling with stuff like this. And I thought it was kind of an interesting angle because it's not really something you see a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I definitely like purposely wanted to make him a central character and a strong character, which he is despite his, you know, disability. So it was definitely something that, I put a lot of thought into. He has his young son that rides around with him that he has to protect as the monster attacks. He's kind of, you know, and despite his disability, he doesn't let that, you know, stop him from moving on. I thought that was kind of an important message, especially within the context of the world, the universe that we're in.
Well, I wanted to ask about Nacho Lobo as well, because that dude, like that character to me, as I was, you know, skimming through the books and that, there was just something about him, like he's so complicated. Is that maybe a good word for him?
Yeah. So, he's, go ahead.
No, go ahead and give us the background on Nacho.
So Nacho was a character. So prior to this color book, I had done a black and white, like I had talked about that I was drawing. And Nacho was one of the characters I came up with. And I just loved the name. And he's a very complex character. And like all great, you know, villains, you can kind of see his side. As in the next series that we're doing, Blood of the Matador, we really kind of get to see his story. But his whole thing is that he leads this cartel, and they control. They found a way to control kaiju, certain kaiju. So they have he has these pet chupacabras, and his whole thing is that he wants to unite. It's basically like only the strong survive. You know, they live in a world now with monsters, so he wants to get rid of the weak people and build kind of build it back with just these basically gangsters and whatnot. But he also has it in for the Matador because he's like, he sees himself as the alpha, and so he sees the Matador as his competition. So long as the Matador is around, he can't rule the roost or whatnot. So there's this dynamic between them that we'll explore. And I don't want to ruin too much because we get into it a lot in the next series. But he's just got a cool look to him too.
I agree.
Yeah. And he's very measured, you know, he's not like an over the top bad guy. He really, in his mind, he's doing the right thing. And that's always, you know, scary with any bad guy where you can go, well, yeah, you know, from a certain point of view, I can see where he's coming from, right?
Yeah. Well, in my research, I found out that you worked in the toy industry for a while. So I was just kind of curious, how did that prepare you to create this Monster Matador universe?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I was in the toy industry. I worked on developing, obviously, toy lines, but also developing them for animated series and things like that. So, I mean, I've always been a writer, but it definitely drove home a lot of kind of storytelling, but also just how to build like a brand, you know, from the ground up. And how to develop that. So that was really helpful. But I always think about it as sometimes I'll think about what would make a cool toy, you know what I mean? Like in terms of the design of the characters and things like that, especially like with the luchadors. We have a lot of fun with them. There's Senorita Sangre, who's got these like two massive swords. There's another luchador that he carries around the bottle of alcohol and he spits out fire, you know? So that's probably a little more influence from the toy side of being like, oh, okay, what kind of accessories can I add for these But the world building part was definitely, I created a brand called Power Bugs, which was basically Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but with bugs. And we had developed an animated series for it, you know, a whole universe for it. Unfortunately, the company went under the week we went into production on the series, on the animated show. But yeah, that was really helpful. And just like really learning how to stretch something, you know, from an idea, because the show was slotted at, I think it was 52 episodes or something. It's something crazy. So it's like, how do you sustain something like that, you know, mm-hmm. for so long? So I definitely learned a lot about pacing and you know, how to kind of like, how to stretch an idea, you know, how to pace an idea, I guess, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense because, yeah, 52 episodes is a long run.
It's a lot, yeah.
Yeah, especially nowadays where you have shows that are like 10 episodes and that's it.
Right, right.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I know you mentioned El Santo, but do you have any other favorite luchadors?
I mean, El Santo is kind of like, you know. I mean, I like Blue Demon. Those are really the two that I know really well, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. I'll be honest. I haven't really explored the whole wrestling world of Lucha. It's really just the Santo movies. So it's something that's very new to me that I'm actually learning more about as I write this book. And it's really cool. It's really fascinating. Just, you know, the culture around it. Because, you know, when we look at kind of like wrestling here, I mean, growing up for me, it was like, you know, the WWF, you had like Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan and Macho Man. And, you know, they were all kind of like cartoon characters, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they were always in character. But then, you know, you'd see them in interviews and they were kind of like, you know, just themselves or whatever. Or they would do a movie and have a different persona or whatnot. You know, it was an evolving thing. But with these luchadors, they, you know, it's not just a job. It's like a lifestyle, you know, like that mask stays on, right?
Yeah.
And it's also respected, right? Mm-hmm. There's a certain level of respect that they're offered. Whereas here, you know, it's not that we don't respect wrestlers or whatnot, but it's kind of different, you know?
Oh yeah, no, you know, definitely.
We kind of laugh about them. We make fun of them. You know what I mean? Like in here, we tend to want to take them down, take everything down a notch, you know. Whereas there, it's taken very seriously. You know, it's not like a joke. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things with this book and with Monster Matador. When the Matador, you know, because he's wearing his, you know, his costume the whole time. One of the things that I wanted to make a point of within the book is that, especially something like Afropocalypse, where he's joined by all these other monster hunters, no one looks at him like, oh, you know, there isn't the typical, oh, who walked in with a Halloween costume or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like he walks in and they immediately respect him. And I think one of the first lines that one of the guys when they see him is like, oh, I thought he'd be bigger or something like that, you know. And that was something, a point I kind of wanted to drive home, was that it's a costume, but, you know, it's something that's taken seriously, but also demands respect, you know. And that's a fascinating part of that whole culture and the whole Lucha culture to me, because it's kind of opposite of what, you know, we have here in a way.
Right, right. Absolutely. Yeah. The reverence is much, much more for Lucha Libre.
And it's a lot of fun to write because they take themselves, you know, they take it very seriously. You know, they're not a persona, you know, like Macho Man isn't like, he's not Macho Man Randy Savage. And then he goes home and he's just Randy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
like these guys, like, you know, the head of it is, you know, Dr. Destructor. And, you know, he is Dr. Destructor. That's who he is. You know, that is like, it's like they inhabit this almost like this totem or whatever you want to call it, and that's who they are. They're not playing a part. You know what I mean?
All right, well, let's start wrapping some things up here. I'm going to run down the Kickstarter one more time. The Kickstarter for Monstadores, the one shot. It is a new spinoff, as you mentioned, Stephen. And folks, 17 more days. Where's the best place to find information about the Kickstarter besides going to Kickstarter itself and maybe searching that way? Is there maybe some links to social media or whatnot that you could share with us?
Yeah, we're on Twitter, Facebook, and Blue Sky at Monster Matador. We're on Instagram at Monster Matador, Threads at Monster Matador. I mean, just a Monster Matador. all those social medias. I've got that. Fortunately, I have that locked down. So that's funny because that's a name when I came up with that. I'm like, someone must have come up with that. Or, you know, someone must have had it. And before I even did the comic or anything, I had locked down like the website, you know, social media, stuff like that. Anything I could grab with Monster Matador.
Well, it's a smart thing. You know, it's just that more and more of them keep popping up and it's like, how many do I need to have, you know?
Right. Well, that's the thing. And then they pop up and they go away. And...
All right. Well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to start wrapping things up here. As I said, Stephen, any last words you want to let the listeners know or hear, tell the listeners?
If you love luchadors, if you love kaiju, if you love Mad Max, if you just love great action-packed storytelling, you will love Monstradors. You will love Monster Matador. Check it out on Kickstarter. And feel free to reach out if you have any questions. Like I said, I'm on social media at Monster Matador. So,
all right, there you go. Stephen, it's been an awesome, awesome time talking to you. Thank you so very much for spending some time out of your busy day to sit down and chat with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great to be on the show.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Stephen Prince talking about his new book, Monstadores One Shot, the Kickstarter that goes along with that project, and of course, all of the other books that are featured in the Monster Matador universe. Once again, I want to thank Stephen for taking some time out of his busy schedule to sit down and chat with me. And again, folks, check out the Kickstarter. If you like what you see, donate, support the project. And I'm pretty sure that I can speak for Stephen and say that he would greatly appreciate it. All right, now it's time for me to tell you where you can get in touch with me if you have a question about this episode or any episode for that matter. You can shoot me an email if you like. JohnOrlando@pvdcast.com is the email address. You can drop me a message over on the Instagram, Facebook, and Threads accounts. Just go to @pvdcast. And I'm even still on Twitter. My Twitter handle over there is @PVDMVP. Maybe you want to let some folks know where they can hear the PVD cast, and there's a couple different avenues for that. First, PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly, and probably the best place to get every single new episode. Of course, the PVD cast is also available through all those major podcasting outlets and apps. All you got to do is go to your favorite podcasting app, go to the search engine, put in PVD cast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it and you should find it. And don't forget, please, to rate and review. Rating and reviewing helps me out in the algorithm. And of course, you don't have to write anything super huge. You can give me as many stars as you want. Just help me out by making sure that you rate and review. And of course, if you subscribe as well, then you never miss an episode of the PVD cast. But there's a third way that you can check out every episode, and that is through the Facebook page. Simply go over to @PVDcast on Facebook on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can hear a live broadcast of the week's episode. So there's three different ways you can hear the PVDcast. PVDcast.com through your favorite podcasting outlet or app, and through the Facebook page on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. All right, the throat is starting to go here, and I do apologize once again for the way that I sound, but you know, deadlines have to be met, and you know, just got to go with the flow, so to speak. So thanks again for checking out this episode. I really appreciate it, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and unlike me, stay safe and healthy. Presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2025.